I could see this being the game changer of all game changers. And this makes me think Google Search's franchise is in good hands. I think,
you know,
this is going to increase revenue.
Does it make the J trade list?
100%.
Okay.
I think Google is going to be number one at language models. I am convinced that Google beats Microsoft / OpenAI.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by LinkedIn Marketing. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, go to linkedin.com/thisweekinstartups. Squarespace. Turn your idea into a new website. Go to squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. And Roots. Invest in the only real estate investment trust that creates wealth for you and its residents at investwithroots.com/twist.
All right, everybody, welcome to Monday. And if it's Monday, Sunny Mondra, Money Mondra, is here. And he is back to do AI demos. We have a bunch of rapid fire news stories because everybody is releasing new products at the same time. Here we are at the end of year one of this AI renaissance that started in Q4 of 2022. And OpenAI has launched DALL-E 3. We're going to go over that. Microsoft has officially announced its AI sidekick called, very creatively, Copilot. And then YouTube is going all in on generative AI. And finally, Google just announced Bard extensions. And we're going to go right into this demo because it is extraordinary what Google has launched. I was talking to a unbelievably senior executive about this at Google socially. I was at a dinner. And, you know, this is an example, I think, of Google taking this absurdly seriously and dropping what I'll call right out of the gate right now. I think this could be the OpenAI killer. This could be where Google, this moment today, when you see these demos, I think this is the moment Bard leapfrogs OpenAI. Sonny, let's get to it. Let's show people what bard.google.com has released. This is big.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. All right. So this week, what we're going to get, let me just pull this sharing up here. If you go into your Bard and you go right over here, you should have this new option called
extensions. So if you're on the top right, let's describe it for people listening. If you're not watching, just go to YouTube and type in This Week in Startups. But you'll have, when you're on bard.google.com, on the top right, your avatar, you know, you go slightly to the left of it, you'll have that gearbox for your settings, then you'll have help. Yep. But then you'll see a puzzle piece. And the puzzle piece in that icon on the top right of your interface at bard.google.com is extensions. I think the equivalent of extensions in OpenAI parlance is plugins.
Plugins.
They call them extensions, plugins. It's the same thing. It's plugging a service into a language model. What did they add?
And so, yeah, it's a great way of doing it. I think the interesting thing here is they've connected it to core services that Google offers themselves. And
so
this is bringing together the magic of generative AI and, you know, these kind of speech models together with real-time information and data from the most important sources for us, highly monetizable sources as well, which are flights, hotels, maps, YouTube, and then workspaces. Workspaces inclusive of your Gmail, your Google Drive, Docs. I think it's really exciting what you're able to start using Bard for now.
Okay. So we have five specific extensions, aka plugins, turned on at bard.google.com/extensions. That's the URL. We'll put this in the show notes. You need to share this video with every single person on your team. You need to get every single employee at your company using these tools before they ask a question in a meeting, because 9 out of 10 times, they're going to come to the meeting with 10 more IQ points or 20 more ideas. Let's get started. Where do you want to start with these five extensions? We'll do one example of each.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's start with maps, right? And say, and you can, you know, basically you do this at maps.
And look, it pulls up the extension and lets you click it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's
and then
slick.
From there, I say, like, I am planning a drive from Palo Alto, to Napa Valley. Okay. Can you provide me directions? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go. So this is what we're just going to build up. This is, you know, pretty straightforward. No one should be shocked by this. Like, normally you'd have to go in Maps and do it. And so you can see here, it's kind of using it and it's figured it out and it's given me the driving directions. Let's just say along the way is like, can you find me a, Shake Shack, along the way to, along the way. Right.
And, okay.
And so what it's able to do is basically kind of, you know, you can double click into it and it says, hey, it's found a Shake Shack at Stanford Shopping Center along the way, you know, from Palo Alto to Napa Valley.
Okay. So it's and understanding in plain language what you're saying. If we were in our car and you were to try to do this, it wouldn't work. It's really hard to do find me stuff along the way. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, I think like there's no reason for the, you know, this to not be enabled by voice. And so I think if you're, what we're going to start to see come together is, you know, if you're using CarPlay or your car has Android Auto in it, that you'll be able to use like sort of the voice input button and these technologies start to manifest themselves in our day-to-day use cases and that. So I think that'll be really powerful because this is what happens all the time where you're driving and then you sort of have this inspirational moment of, hey, I want to try this and it can go and, you know, figure that out for you.
So this didn't blow me out of the water, but I came up with an example. If you let me share my screen.
Yeah.
So we'll do dueling banjos here.
Yeah.
You know, I use something called All Trails. I don't know if people have All Trails for finding hikes, but here I asked something that I thought would be a little bit more challenging. At Google Maps, what's an amazing hike I can take in Northern California that is 3 to 5 miles and has stunning views? And I did at Google Maps. Now, it said, here are a few amazing hikes. And it gave me, you know, these five hikes, right? Including Point Bonita Trail, which is that 2.5 mile round trip hike to the lighthouse that has stunning views of the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't know if you ever took that one, like north of the Golden Gate Bridge. You ever do that?
Oh, yeah. Incredible. Yeah. In the Marin Headlands. Yeah. It's
beautiful. Incredible.
Yeah.
Now, look at this. I hope this helps you find the perfect hike for your next adventure. And sure enough, it plots them on Google Maps. And so this is a really nice experience, right? Easy to understand, and it was correct. I'm going to give them some nice feedback here. But you can start adding, you know, multiple things here that would help. All right, listen. When you're selling to business buyers, you really want to get your pitch in front of decision makers. Why? Because upper-level execs are usually the ones making purchasing decisions. Duh. The problem is, high-level folks can be really hard to find and target on most social media platforms. But on LinkedIn, oh my God, they know all of the CTOs, all of the CFOs, all of the VPs of finance, engineering, HR, recruiting. All those titles are sitting there waiting for you. And now let's just talk about the funnel. LinkedIn's about to hit 1 billion members. Did you know that? 950 million members at this point in time. There are 180 million of those 950 who are senior level execs. There are 10 million C-level executives in that 180 million senior level execs, which are part of the 950 million members. I am a C-level executive. I am on LinkedIn all day long because LinkedIn equals business, business equals LinkedIn, and LinkedIn ads are built specifically for B2B marketers. LinkedIn generates 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social media platforms. LinkedIn equals business, business equals LinkedIn. When people are on LinkedIn, they're ready to do business. It's that simple. So make business-to-business marketing everything it can be. And get a $100 credit on your next campaign from me, your boy, J-Cal. I'm sending you the hundy, linkedin.com/thisweekinstartups to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/thisweekinstartups. Terms and conditions apply because they're giving you the hundy. Google Maps is in there. That's great. Or I wonder if we could say, map all the superchargers, you know, in, I don't know, Texas. And the distance between each one. Like, that would be a more complicated query, right? So if I did a new chat.
Yeah, you queue that one up.
Okay.
Okay.
And show me all the Tesla superchargers in Texas on a map and give me a table with the shortest distances between them. See if it doesn't. I don't know if it's going to get this right. This is like a little bit of a complicated thing. I don't even know what I'm asking for here, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But it's using Google Maps. It's querying here. This is not an easy one because I'm asking for a lot, right?
Okay. I've got one too.
What's yours?
Okay, let me share mine.
So this could be
here's mine.
Okay.
So I was like, I did, how long is the drive from Atlanta to Orlando? Uh-huh. And give me some ideas how to keep three kids entertained in the car.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so it says, here's the drive. And this is one of their, you know, pre-canned ones, right? So I was just leveraging it because I thought it was great. It's like, here, the drive is this long. It obviously gives me a Google map. I'm just scrolling through this here. And basically, it says, here's some ideas how to keep your kids entertained, snacks, games, take a break every couple hours, and here's some additional tips. And so I really like how this is, you know, allowing you to kind of bring, you know, these were all different pieces, and we've seen them in you know, apps being built on top of these APIs. But Google is really bringing things together here around, kind of their technologies.
I think we're at a loss for coming up. Let me share my screen. I think you and I are at a bit of a loss for coming up with examples here because this is a new concept, right?
Yeah.
But here, I've been thinking about it and I made up one that was a little bit strange.
Okay.
But here's what I did. Show me all the Tesla superchargers in Texas on a map and give me a table with the shortest distances between them. So what I'm getting at here is I'm doing competitive intelligence. I just want to know, like, how close are these things together, right? And here we go. In Austin, Testix, Giddings, Testix, Arlington, it gave me a table here that I could export to Sheets. So we're seeing a table format. It's formatting it correctly. It's giving me the shortest distance, which seems to be there are a bunch of them within 4 miles of each other. That must be, you know, a whole bunch of density. I can put it into a Google Sheet, which is quite nice. Then it says, here are the shortest distances between the first three superchargers in Texas. And then it decided it would give me the maps of all of them. And then it would start giving me driving directions between them. So, you know, that's not bad. And then I could ask a follow-up. What's the longest distance you can drive between two Tesla superchargers? Or what is the longest?
Ooh.
What would you say? What is the biggest?
Furthest distance. I guess the longest.
Yeah, what's
longest
the biggest? What would you say? Like the biggest hole? The biggest? Uncovered area in the United States for Tesla superchargers.
Oh, that's a tough one.
That's a tough one, right? So now if I'm working at Tesla.
You don't even have to fix the spelling, but.
You don't even, isn't that crazy? I'm such a little perfectionist here, but okay.
Yeah.
What's the biggest uncovered area in the United States for Tesla superchargers? Place on Google Maps. Here we go. Let's see. This one is going to take a little time, right? But this is a really hard one. In other words, like, what's the white space here between Tesla supercharge? Where are the least density of supercharge? You got to think. The biggest state in the U.S. is Alaska and has only one supercharger. It is located in Soldanta, has a 4.3. That's interesting. So I guess it would be Alaska. Outside of Alaska, what's the sparsest supercharger area? Let's see. So now I'm just like pushing it, right? To see if it understands the context of the last question and this one. The biggest uncovered area for Tesla, that's the way to say it. Outside of Alaska is North Dakota. Okay. There are no Tesla superchargers in North Dakota? Really? I find that hard to believe. How many Tesla superchargers are in North Dakota? It's going to give me, there's got to be Tesla superchargers.
I know, that's hard to believe. Yeah, there are. I see one just in a regular
Google
search.
So work left to be done. Okay,
we
found there immediately that there are, there are no Tesla superchargers in North Dakota, it's saying. But wait a second, there are two nearby states?
Yeah.
But it gives us states that are in North Dakota.
Yeah.
Okay, so somebody send this to Sundar and the other folks at Google Maps, whoever's in charge of Google Maps, still work to be done. So I'll stop sharing there. Okay. So we beat the horse to death there. What should we do next?
Okay. Let me take control back here.
Yep. I'm off. I'm going to go to flights next.
Oh yeah. That's what I had.
That's what you wanted.
I had pulled it up. Right. And so, you know, flying flights to Miami for New Year's. We're going to go have a party, J-Cal, New Year's,
awesome.
Miami.
Let's go. Blow it out.
Great. Let's do it. You know, what's AI, the usual temperature?
Sunny, and oh, we should do like a little AI meetup, me and you.
AI meetup, yeah. Mm. And, you know, look, it basically finds the flights, it pulls it in from Google Flights, gives me a little chart, and then you can kind of click through these and it will, you know, take you into the Google Flights interface and go from there. And so I think that's really interesting. You know, here's another example I was doing while you were queuing it went up. It's like, show me flights to Tokyo and give me an idea of things to do. How about Seoul as well? So this is like sort of, you know, one of the experiences that we were trying to, you know, early on try when plugins became available with OpenAI around just flight experiences, things to do, what, you know, what's there, here's ideas of things to check out. And like, what's interesting is because they own these services, they can start to create a really integrated experience. They don't have to fully rely on a third party and they don't have that issue, you know, which we even talked about in the previous pod where there's a risk of cannibalization, right? If you're
Zillow took their plugin down.
Exactly.
And the Kayak plug out. I had Kayak CEO on This Week in Startups and he doesn't believe in this kind of interface. I think he's wrong, by the way. I think this interface is going to be a better interface. He seemed to think it wasn't. So I don't know if he was...
You know, like, look, natural language, we'll look back and we'll think about how we were just used to click on a box, find an airport, click on the next one, put in dates, you know, look through charts. And, you know, I completely agree with you on this is going to be the interface, the go-to interface for most parts for folks. And, you know, you talked about this last time, you'll probably just be wearing AirPods or, you know, some equivalent, and you'll just talk into it and it'll give you the answers and create your itinerary in the background.
Or, I mean, imagine Apple goggles and it's just showing you this while you and I are talking and it's just coming up. Here's at Google Flights. Let me ask at Google Flights, what's the most affordable business class ticket from the East Coast of the United States to Saudi Arabia, since I'm going there, to keynote their conference.
While you're pulling that one up, I did find
with
me some
one stop or less.
So while you're doing that one, I have another one pulled up here. Is like, can you find me some hotels in this area in Buenos Aires and suggest some things to do there? And again, it finds me the list of hotels. And
ask
here's
it for a specific date. Pick 3 days and then sort it by price.
Okay. Okay.
And say you want 5 stars.
Let's
give me 5 stars.
Give me 5-star only options between October 3rd and 6th. So I found several 5-star hotels that are available from these dates and it lists them out and, you know, we're off to the races and let's verify their 5 stars. So here they are, the Palladio, the Alvier, and the Four Seasons. Good job.
So let me share mine. And I, you know, again, I'm not checking if this is correct. So we do have the hallucination problem that we just saw with Google Maps. But let's see where we're at here. I said most affordable business class tickets from the East Coast of the United States to Saudi Arabia with 1 stop or less. Because sometimes there can be very cheap flights coming out of Boston or DC or New York. And you might, if you're trying to save money, say, you know what, I got some business in Boston. Yeah. Let me take the Excella up there, do my meetings, and then go. And so here I said, and it said the most affordable business class ticket from the East Coast of the United States to Saudi Arabia. And it gave me 3 of them. And Royal Air, Maroc, Egypt Air, Kuwait Airlines. I would have never looked at these. And they're only $2,600, $2,800 round trip for business class. That doesn't make sense. One's got a layover in Kuwait, one in Cairo, one in Casablanca. But those are ridiculous prices. I don't think that's correct. Usually it's $5,000 to $10,000 for round trip business class.
Usually, especially to the Middle East.
Especially to the Middle East. And it
look at that.
Yeah, and I got actually put it in a Google Flights. So this seems pretty promising. Give me all the flights from the Bay Area to New York City with GoGo in-flight internet. Now, I'm asking for something very specific. Like, let's say I had a GoGo membership or something. This is a stupid query. But I wonder if it even knows what that is, because I know that Google Flights does put internet in there. Unfortunately, searching for flights with internet is not possible. But it gives me some other ones. Not bad. I mean, I could see this being a better interface for Google Flights, right?
If your landing page is terrible, I'm out, right? Most consumers are. It's 2023. You can't have an ugly website. Stop settling for okay or good and have great. And great means you're using Squarespace. It's out of the box, beautiful. These websites have templates made by the world's greatest designers that are going to engage your audience, let you sell anything. And Squarespace, over the past decade, has just added feature after feature on top of the gorgeous templates that are designed for mobile. And the drag and drop web design with their fluid engine is just perfect, easy to use. And you get built-in analytics, marketing channel analysis, sales data, all that stuff. Not, you know, it goes beyond page views and site visits and time and all that. And with Squarespace, you can create an online store or you can start a blog. Click of a button, right? Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. You can create a subscription business for members only content. You're seeing a lot of that out there. It's simple. It's cost effective. It's gorgeous. And they keep adding feature after feature after feature. That's when technology is at its best, isn't it? When you pay one price, but the product gets better and better and better. You get that with your Tesla. You get that with your iPhone. You get that with Squarespace. These are the legendary brands of the internet of this era. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, I want you to go to squarespace.com/twist, and they're going to give you 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Go to squarespace.com/twist because they know we sent you.
So let's keep going here. YouTube, I guess, is the next one we could try, or we could go to Google Docs. What do you think? Or Gmail?
I have a Gmail one.
Okay.
I did an example. I said, show me my most recent emails with Jason Calacanis. And it basically pulls up the email, a quick subject and summary. But you can see here you sent a summary for the All-In Summit videos.
Yes, that's my newsletter.
Your most recent letters and, you know, a couple of personal emails that we have with each other.
Ask them to now write a summary in bullet points of the topics I've discussed with Jason Calacanis on email over the past 2 years.
Ooh. Wow. Okay.
This would be like something you give to a research assistant, right?
Yeah. Let's just say year.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Let's see. We'll blur all this out.
Yeah. This is harder with you because you send emails out.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is interesting. Here's a summary of topics you've discussed with Jason Calacanis last year in bullet points. Investments, poker, upcoming poker games. Blur that out.
Blur.
And then blank and blank's wedding. Beep. Beeps. Wedding. Yep. And so that's pretty interesting if you think of it conceptually.
Yeah.
I just asked if it could tell me who the top 10 people I was emailing with from 2010 to 2015 from the emails in my Gmail, and it did not get it right. Let me ask it. Who are venture capitalists who I have traded emails with in my Gmail account? Let's see if it, I mean, now it's got to look at the people and determine if they're venture capitalists. I don't know how it does that, but it's accessing my emails. All right. Well, this is pretty interesting. It got a little bit correct. It said the following venture capitalists are mentioned in your Gmail account: Dave Hornick from August and Jesse Draper from Halogen Ventures. So it's kind of scratching the surface of being useful. I would say this is not useful yet, but it's close.
Yeah.
Close. And that's kind of an interesting experience if you think about it. And what items have I purchased? Oh, I see. Here's a good one. What Knicks games did I buy tickets to based on my Gmail? Let's see. Because, you know, I'd have like the receipts in there, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that would be kind of an interesting one. And I could not find any people buying tickets. Okay, that didn't work.
Okay, I have one. I have one.
So far, this is terrible. So whoever's working at Gmail, terrible job.
I think you're pushing the boundaries. That's what we're here to do. I like it. And I think it, yeah. But, you know, credit to Google. They're putting these things out early. They're not waiting for them to be perfected and letting us play with them.
Okay, I agree. Good.
All right. So, you know, we had an idea a couple years ago. I'll share with you with my co-founder. We were thinking of things to work on before we started Definitive. One of the things that we were and, you know, thinking about building was a wildfire suppression company that used drones to fight wildfires. And so I have this doc in my Google Drive. So I asked it, give me a summary of the wildfire suppression document. And so it actually gave me a quick
summary of that summary document of that, from of August that document. Of 2021.
Yeah.
Now, if you asked it a follow-up, tell me other businesses, other startups like this from the web. Or has anybody has anybody raised money for this idea? You know, and this is where if Crunchbase or PitchBook know, had their data in there, you could start to use, or AngelList put their data in there, you could start to, you know, be able to pull data from those databases. Now, I don't know what that does to their business, and if they have a motivation to do that, or they'd rather you come to PitchBook, Crunchbase. Okay. Here are some other startups developing similar concepts. Rain is developing a network of autonomous aircraft that can be deployed to contain wildfires within 10 minutes of ignition. Dryad is developing an IoT network of sensors to detect wildfires early before they have a chance to spread. Burnbot is developing a robotic fuel management system that can help to reduce the risk of wildfires. Torch is developing a small outdoor smoke detector that can be used to alert homeowners. Insight Robotics is developing a purpose-built RGB and multispectral aerial survey system used to map. Yeah, so this is interesting. The most interesting one I saw was a forest management one that a founder pitched me on. That's public knowledge, so I'm not speaking out of school here, but imagine you had a, what do they call those? It's not like a dump truck, but, you know, like a plow with a thing on the front that could like knock through the forest, you know, like a tractor type device. So imagine like a really powerful tractor that would knock down trees and make a fire lane.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. To make, that's, you know, containing fires is the most important thing. You can't really put them out.
Now
right?
imagine but you can, that was fire resistant, maybe, you know. Fire retardant, fire resistant, and it was remote control.
Yeah.
So now there's a fire, God forbid, you know, in South Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
And you send one of these things up the hill.
Yep.
And you have it start knocking a fire lane out.
Yeah.
Knocking trees down. And there's embers everywhere. It's the densest smoke you ever saw.
Yeah.
The remote control fire truck doesn't care. So I thought that was like a really interesting idea. The idea I had was a blanket system. So you know, fire blankets, there's a fire blanket.
That's what you're supposed to use. Yeah.
On cars. I looked for this. There are sheets that some fire departments have. Look for a on YouTube. Oh, well, let's do this on YouTube. Blanket. We have the YouTube search. Yeah. Let's do it on YouTube.
Oh, let's try it here.
Let's use it. So let's ask at YouTube.
Okay. Yeah,
We don't need a producer anymore. So sorry, Nick and producer John, and producer Nick, we have Google Bard. That's it. So I want you to do at YouTube, show me a video of a fire blanket to cover a burning car with for fire departments or something to that effect. Now,
I think these have those for your house, right? But like,
well, they don't have them for your house, but I had seen these fire blankets before and they have them for your house for like people. Yeah. And so here, watch this.
Even to put over your stove, I've seen it. But
I'm talking about putting it over your house.
Oh, the entire house.
Look at this video now. We'll press that video.
Let's do it.
And now you watch this video. It's so cool. So here is a fire blanket on an electric vehicle. Four firefighters just drop this blanket on top of a burning car. No oxygen. It's a heavy blanket. Yeah. And nobody has to waste any water or anything.
I'm just fast forwarding through it for everyone.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And so they just
there they go.
It's like they're walking a tarp. They're just taking and throwing it over a burning car.
That is incredible.
Now imagine that on the top of your house, or a helicopter dropping on the top of a $10 million house, you know, somewhere in Malibu, where you just had that for your house and there was some way to have it roll down. Now your house is covered in a fire blanket. All the embers hit the fire blanket. What could that cost? $50,000? $25,000 to install? $100,000? You know, on a $10 million house in fire country, $100,000 system would not be crazy. And, you know, that'd be a lot cheaper. 1% of the cost of a house, and what are you paying in insurance per year?
So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, those planes that people get to have parachutes? It's kind of like that.
Yeah. You hope you're never going to use it. It's completely ridiculous. You're talking about the series. Yeah. Okay, so we got the YouTube working here. So let's do a YouTube video, summarize the three earliest video of Chamath Palihapitiya on YouTube. That's an interesting one. because I will do that sometimes and sort videos in reverse chronological order to find the oldest videos of somebody. I don't know. Let's see if this does it correctly. Summarize the three earliest videos of Chamath Mahapatiya on YouTube. It's searching Bard. Is this Bard circles pulsating? And so is the YouTube. Sorry,
I got that. Sorry, I can't answer that right now. Okay.
Well, okay. You know. So it doesn't work. How about we ask a question about Mr. Beast? What are Mr. Beast's top three videos?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's a silly, easy one. You'd have to go, if you wanted to know that, you would simply go to his channel
sort
page.
By the videos. Sort, yeah, you know,
but
yeah.
If he did it here, it'd be quicker.
Three videos by view by Mr. Beast.
Got to get that one right. That's easy.
I mean, we'd hope so.
Or maybe this plugin isn't working right now. This extension.
This goes back to the integration. Let's see. I feel like this one. Here we go. So top three videos by view.
That's pretty good.
And you know, he has said this recently. So he was saying, right, the most recent videos have the most views. So
got it.
These are all pretty recent. They're all within the last 6 months.
Yeah. So say, show me the top three by year for Mr. Beast. That could be interesting. It's top three by year, publishing date, something like that.
Oh, yeah. This had a little bit more content. Oh, it was just showing some other stuff down here.
Yep.
Let's see what it's doing here. So it can't answer that.
See?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, you know, my guess is this is just a limitation of.
And by the way, this
YouTube
is wrong. The
search.
Squid video got 501 million views. So.
Oh, okay. It was wrong. Okay. So that's feedback that we need because that's not true. Okay.
So when something like this is wrong, let me ask you a technical question here, Sunny. Why is it wrong? Why is it not getting this right? Because a human could get this right. Is this the language model?
Yeah.
Is it the extension? Is it the data set? Is it reinforcement learning? Why would he get this wrong? This seems like very simple.
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons. Let's break it down. So first thing is these models are, through their reinforcement learning, mm-hmm. have been taught to, always provide answers because telling a human no, when they were being trained, they learned that when they tell a human no, the human doesn't like it. So they always try to give an answer. That's part of its, and that's why they very rarely say, I don't know.
Got it.
Okay. Then what happens is in this particular case, it's a limitation of, and I don't know this 100%, but I'm pretty willing to guess given, knowledge of like APIs. That type of search that we're asking for it to do, it's a limitation of the Google search, the YouTube search API. It doesn't let you search by year, by top. Because the API just doesn't exist. And think about that yourself. Like if you're in YouTube and you're sorting by search, there is really no option to say, show me by year, right? You have to kind of go by view or by year and then do like a secondary work yourself. And it just they haven't given it the ability to understand how to manipulate the API results to get that answer. So it's a kind of a combination of those two things that are leading to that limitation.
Interesting. Because I just asked it, which YouTube channels have the most subscribers and views?
Yeah.
And, I don't know how correct this is, but it says, here are some of the YouTube channels with the most subscribers, MDM, Mr. Beast, the most subscribed. I mean, I don't think this is correct. I think it's getting this MDM has 606,000 subscribers. It's not even close.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's getting that. It's not actually getting that from YouTube.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Today, I'm joined by Roots CEO, Dan Dorfman. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Tell everybody here in the audience, what is Roots and what makes it different than the other real estate investing platforms? I'm a complete neophyte.
Roots is a REIT with a little twist. Sorry, I had to do it. We are the first real estate portfolio that we know of that builds wealth for both our investors and our residents. And we've created a unique win-win model that creates partners and not tenants. We built this model because I've spent my entire career in real estate investment, 13 years. And what you always hear from people is, hey, location, location, location. But location at the end of the day doesn't actually pay your bills. And location doesn't let you know when there's a small leak that will create mold in the future. The people do. And the people who rent your properties are really the people who generate your profits. And when those people are your partners, it really creates this amazing scenario. And it's this model that's helped us grow our fund over 36% in the last 2 years.
Fantastic. How can people learn more about this opportunity, both on the tenant side or on the investor side?
Check us out at investwithroots.com/twist.
All right, everybody go to investwithroots, no spaces, no dashes, .com/twist to sign up and start investing today.
Like I said, I think as an early release and as the examples that they provide, so if we switch back for a quick second, when you're looking for the content, I think it does a good job. When you're looking for kind of numerical answers, This is where, to be honest, where like Definitive actually comes into the picture, because we help LLMs with kind of numerical information reason through that, and then kind of provide that, alongside the information that may exist. And so, we can work more closely with Google on this and come up with some interesting
things. I'm going to go ahead and just say to Google, C+. Congratulations, but I'm giving him a C.
Okay.
I'm just giving him a letter grade of a C because I want him to work a little bit harder here, but I guess they just want to show they're in the game and that these things will be connected. And this to me reminds me of like a blocker strategy with consumers. Microsoft used to do the same thing. When Lotus Notes was getting a lot of steam, Microsoft, yep. And it was called vaporware back in the 80s and 90s really. Microsoft would launch vaporware. It didn't exist, but they would announce, hey, we have a Lotus Notes product coming. It's in development. It's called Project, Armadillo or something. They would come up with some stupid name. And what that was designed to do was to freeze the market, freeze developers, freeze enterprises from engaging with some new product. So that's what this reeks of for me is Google saying, just so you know, if anybody was thinking about funding a startup in flights or hotels, we're doing this.
We're in it.
We're in it. We're in the game. So don't think that we're asleep at the wheel. This is we're not asleep at the wheel move. But Sundar needs to get each of these people in a room on Mondays, Google Docs. On Tuesdays, the YouTube team, they got to come to his office and they got to, and Sundar has to do these searches and say, let's talk about how quickly these type of things are going to be fixed.
Yeah.
But I could see this being the game changer of all game changers. And this makes me think Google Search's franchise is in good hands. Well, I think, this is going to increase revenue.
Does it make the J trade list?
100%.
Okay.
I think Google is going to be number one at language models. I am convinced that Google beats Microsoft/OpenAI. That's my belief. I don't think they beat them to the extent that Google beat Bing. So if you want to look at success, I think this could be more like a duopoly kind of Android iOS situation. So I'm not saying they're going to dominate the market. I think they're going to win. If we were to look at, the top five products in this space, I think it's Google, Microsoft. And then after that, I'm unsure who would be down that list. Maybe new entrants, maybe Apple gets their act together and buys Claude or something and makes it the Siri team. That's what I would do if I was Tim Cook right now. I'd be looking at Claude AI or some other language startup that's got a good head start. And I would hire them and I would tell everybody who works at Siri, you now work for the team at Claude or whatever.
Yeah.
Here's your new boss. You didn't get it done, but you keep your job. And now you work for this person. And then I would fire whoever's running Siri.
So
Siri should have been this. Same thing with Amazon. If I'm
Alexa.
It's an embarrassment that Siri and Alexa didn't get this done. So if I'm Amazon, I'm looking for a $10 billion purchase in AI, 1 to 20 billion, whatever it is, find the best team, buy them, and put them in charge of Alexa. And now let's say it was the Claude team. Who else would be in this category of language models that have good teams?
Already. Yeah, there's also open source models out there, but like if you want to, those are, you're not going to be able to buy, but you can build off of it. Mm-hmm. But I would say like the ones that Cohere is a big one, Claude is a big one, right? All the people that created the transformer technology, they all are running one of these, right? And then I also believe exactly, you know, didn't Reed and Mustafa from DeepMind start one of these? Yeah. So like, just, you know, there's three or four. Exactly. There's three or four.
Those are all going to get taken out. I think they all get bought by Apple. Far too behind on this.
Yeah.
And Amazon is also embarrassingly far behind on this. They got to catch up. The fact that Google is going to run away with this, they should all be looking at this like they looked at mobile. This is like year one or two of smartphones.
Yeah.
Year one of smartphones. And all of a sudden, we have two candidates for Android and iOS. You don't want to, you know, like somebody here could be BlackBerry, somebody here could be Docomo. Like the race has not been, the race just started. So get your butts in gear, everybody. Let's talk about some of the other news stories. Congratulations on your C plus. You did something to the team at
Give it a B. You know, I say, because look, you know, a year ago, we weren't getting early products like this. We haven't got early products from Google in a long time. And we have this, like, it's, innovation is doing what we want it to do, where competition is forcing us, forcing big companies to move fast, release things that are not quite perfect yet. And
so you're grading it on Google's previous performance of being slow to the party.
Correct.
So on a Google scale, B. Okay, sure. I'm giving it a market score of C. You're giving it a Google score of B. Perfect.
Yeah,
somewhere. So B minus C plus is where the truth is.
Yeah.
Which feels about right. Maybe I'm being too pessimistic here.
Yeah.
This Microsoft Copilot is going to roll out starting September 26th. This is going to be available in Windows, Microsoft 365, Edge, Bing. And this is going to work as it's like a standalone app, but you're going to also be able to right-click on stuff. And this reminds me of Notion and Coda's implementation and Grammarly's implementation of language models. You're in the app. The Copilot's there. You highlight something. You ask a question. But this feels to me like a game changer. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah. I read a tweet this morning that said, like, Microsoft seemingly looked at all the great AI stuff for the last 2 years and basically has put it all into their products, right? Either through the relationship with OpenAI or this Copilot, where it's a Copilot for everything. So in the same way that we're playing around with Bard here, their approach, because they don't have access to, you know, all the same services, they don't really have like a, you know, a map service that's as widely used and like a video service that's as widely used. Their entire approach here is to build a Copilot for everything that's running as like a chat. So like, funny enough, full circle for them, it's like Clippy, you know, but reimagined for 2023, 2024, where alongside anything you're doing, you have access to a Copilot, and they're not limiting it to, you know, websites or data. They're trying to make it like a generalized Copilot for all tasks. That's what's really incredible.
Mm. All right. I think we got through the news stories, right? Did we miss anything in the news?
There was one more, which is YouTube is, and, you know, we don't have the demo, but we can pull it up. YouTube is made available, and I have like the screen share here, so let me pull that up for us. YouTube has made available this editing app for creators that also has AI, so it allow you to, you know, some of the features that we've been demoing, they've made those available. So you can say, you know, hey, create like a video of a panda doing this. And so if you can create a short.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so.
So this is interesting.
What I'm showing here. Yeah. Go ahead. Dico.
No, as you say, a panda drinking coffee. So if I, you know, was a comedian, I could make this video, put my joke on top of it. Right.
Yes.
So
or, you know, they do that face overlay thing. Exactly. Yeah.
This basically shortens the time between publishing and creation in the same way that filters did on Instagram, right? You could put a filter on Instagram and you didn't have to open up Photoshop and take the extra 10 minutes to do that. So this is super brilliant.
Yep. It's
so
really good.
I think that's, so you have basically two groups of people at YouTube. One's making the extension, one's making the creator tools. Brilliant idea.
Yeah. And I think that's going to, you know, if I put something out there, I think YouTube Shorts will surpass TikTok and Instagram Reels.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll show you this next one that I really like that you did. Let me share my screen here.
Can I add one thing here on the YouTube?
Yeah, go ahead.
So recently, and I just mentioned this because I've been noticing this. So what YouTube is doing, and I don't know if we're a partner account or something or why they're doing it to our account specifically, but right now you're looking at the YouTube studio backend for an episode. This is an episode we recently released with the founder, Will Kane. His company is Avnos, and they're basically building hybrid direct air capture boxes that take CO2 out of the air and then convert it into water.
Awesome.
It's carbon capture, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What they did was we had a title. So you could see right here, I'm highlighting the title of the episode. And in the core, it's not doing it right now. And it's only done it to like one out of every 10 videos that we've done over the last couple of weeks. But in the bottom corner, it says, oh, here's an AI punch up for your episode title.
Ah. And
this was the punch up that they gave us. So originally it was like, you know, how HDAC, whatever, some title that isn't as catchy. And it gave us look at the path to reaching net zero with Avnos CEO Will Kane, which I thought was much better and much shorter and tighter. And
yeah,
I was really impressed. But it's odd because it doesn't do it for every episode. It does it for like one in every 10 or 15. And it just happens
randomly. It would be testing it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing we saw was Zoom this week added summaries. So if you're in Zoom, meeting summary is enabled. A temporary transcript is being generated for this feature. So while we're on this call, it's going to make a summary. And I used it this week 3 or 4 times. And then it emails you the summary when you're done. And for a couple of investment meetings that I took this week with startups, I can send that summary to the other people who are helping make the decision. And it was unbelievably accurate. Nick, you want to speak to, we did it for All In Two by accident. And the summary was
fantastic.
If you were to give it the summary on a scale of 1 to 100, 100 being somebody who graduated at Ivy League school summarizing it for $2,000 and taking 2 days, where would you put this on 1 to 100?
Yeah, it's an 80. It's better than someone who is a bad writer would do a worse job than the summary. Like a human Got being it. That's like an okay writer would do
so
a worse job.
So it's a B. Give me some B. B plus, something like that.
So in the 80s.
Yeah, I was going to give it like exactly an 85 to 90 right now. Wow. I give it an 88.
Okay.
Like, it was so good that it's better than most writers I've worked with in my editorial career. I was shocked.
What's really surprising about it is, and John and I were talking about this before, it's actually better than when, you know, we'll transcribe. We were doing this ourselves. We would transcribe meetings, put it into ChatGPT and say, hey, please summarize this for us. It is far better than that. Like far. So
it's
I don't know.
Killing ChatGPT.
I don't know if
I
it's
think
Zoom
it,
using
I'll tell you
its
why.
Own model or if they're.
No, here's the
else.
Secret. I don't know which model they're using. I assume they're using an open source one because they don't want to be dependent and have to pay, because this would get very expensive very quick, I think, if they were using ChatGPT, even with the declining costs. I think the reason they have an advantage is because they know each of the meeting participants log it in their video stems and their audio stems. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to guess that I'm talking right now because it knows that I'm talking right now because it's Jason Calacanis is logged in and Sandeep Madra's in. Now, John said sometimes it mixes up who says what, but I think that's going to be their huge advantage.
Yeah, I've seen that happen as well. But the only time I saw that happen is when you don't give the context for the person that you're talking about. So like John and I were talking about Jason earlier before he joined the call, but we didn't mention him by name. I was just like, oh, he's going to be on in a minute. So then when Zoom says that, it's like, oh, they refer to you as he instead of Jason, right? So it can get a little bit confused if you're talking about something or someone that's not actually present in the meeting or that's you're not giving them like a name. But it was one of the first products that I've seen that actually made me like say wow in a while in the AI space.
It's really good. And again, it's year one. So,
and also in meeting, can I add one thing to it? We used it this week, and like you can also go back and say, hey, what did that person just say? And you can go back to, you know, if you have a little bit of a longer meeting, I thought that was super useful too.
Yeah. So let me show you this thing that you gave me where you upload an image. Let me just share my screen here. I thought this was like the most interesting demo. I could see this being super powerful for e-commerce being built into Shopify and Squarespace pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So if I share my screen.
Or just when you want to sell your stuff, right? It's just like how much pain, you know, exactly, right? Like it's the only reason you don't do it is you want to write the whole description, but this just.
Well, here, I uploaded this image. I have this, I'm in love with Anchor products. If you A-N-K-E-R, my favorite products.
And they have this little tiny cube. It's literally the size of smaller than the baseball. And it flips up and this little slide comes out of the side for your watch, your phone, and then underneath that phone, the flat top of the cube, you can put your AirPods if you have the inducting charging ones. All right, so very simple. I upload an image here, the screenshot, it puts in, and it figures out that this is this anchor thing. And yep. I say, describe it in a sentence or two. By the little green thing on the bottom is my Grammarly, so don't worry about that.
Yep.
Shout out to my friends at Grammarly, CEO is just on the pod. It charges your iPhone, watch, and AirPods in one tiny, sexy cube. And then I say generate.
Generate, there you go.
There you go. And it will, and it starts writing. Introducing the Anchor 3-in-1 Cube with MagSafe. This innovative charging cube is designed to make your life easier and more efficient. With its compact size and sleek design, it's not just practical, but also pleasing to the eye. This incredible device allows you to charge your phone, your iPhone, Apple Watch, and AirPods all at once, eliminating the need for multiple chargers, cluttering up your space. Say goodbye to tangled cords and a load of streamlined charging experiences. Come on. Like, literally, this is absurd. No more lugging around multiple chargers when you're on the go with advanced temperature control features. I mean, give me a break. And now you just, boom, put this on eBay. So I think for people who, let's say you were reselling this, let's say I was just trying to clear out old electronics, like, boom. And so this needs to be built into eBay, but obviously this third party's doing it. And this is absolutely fantastic. Once again, a $30 an hour job is gone.
Yeah.
You literally could be like a person who speaks English as their third language and do this, right? You could do this offshore in a country where the person isn't even native or speaks broken English, or I could probably do it in broken, you know, Spanish or something. We're getting to the point where we're going to eliminate every $20, $30, $40 an hour job for a writer or researcher. It's just it's done. Folks, it's done. Yeah. I'm telling you.
And I think it does a good job for like the kind of recycling economy too. Like, there's so many things that don't get sold because the barrier to entry to writing that description was too much. And now if it's just image, you know, it should very quickly, those guys should be able to change it so that it can even give you like a short description on its own. And you can say regenerate a couple of times and then push one button, publish it out. I think we're going to see that super fast.
The other one I thought was really good was, showed me that you could do this SEC Insights. Can you show SEC Insights? Now, I don't think it has every 10 Q in it because I'm trying to find Uber in here and it only has like a handful of companies in the database. So you got to pick from...
Does it not have Uber?
It doesn't have Uber, but it has Apple and Meta and Amazon. So where do you want to start? Amazon?
Yeah, so let's... okay, let me pull mine up here.
Yeah.
I've got it.
And you can pick which quarter. You add it, boom, and so I guess I've got,
exactly. So I can start my conversation.
So you can start your question about Apple. So why don't you ask it? How is the services business going? And let's see, because that's a thing that as people stop buying, the latest iPhone. I was just tweeting the other day that I'm now skipping a generation. I went from 13. I just
you're not
15.
Getting the USB-C.
No, I am, but I didn't get 14 because I knew USB was coming.
Yeah,
so
I
have the 13 Max Pro. I'm getting the 15 Max Pro with USB-C strictly for the plug. I'm literally buying a $1,700 phone. I buy the highest memory, and I feel like an idiot. But I feel better because I skipped a generation. I'm getting 600 traded in, so net net it's 1,000. But yeah. So it's generating a bunch of subqueries. That's interesting. Yeah. So it must have asked the LLM, what are the questions you should ask?
Yeah, it is.
So that's an interesting approach. That's a very meta approach. What is the revenue of Apple services business? What is the net income of Apple services? What's the growth rate of Apple services business? It's having to do all these subqueries.
Yeah. Because we said, how is it going? Right. So that's such a, it from that, it has to,
And here we go.
So, here we go. Okay. So, it's still generating. So maybe.
Wow. This is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
The revenue for Apple service business. Boom.
Yeah. It was
so it just takes you to the
21
pages.
Billion.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And then
so it gives you a summary and then it gives you the links to it. This is super.
Yeah.
This is what you would ask an analyst.
Here's the growth rate, right? 8%. Yeah, and revenue is $21 billion. And it doesn't know the net income. So it's kind of working through it, but it's interesting. And you know, this is what we're all going to have very soon for all our documents, right? In the same way that you can do it for these structured ones.
Yeah. So then the question becomes, who wins the day? Would you do this on Bard or ChatGPT 4 or 5? And it gives you the right answer. Or does the SEC build this into their website? Or is there a, you know, $500 a year service or Bloomberg adds it? And it's really fine-tuned. And I think it's going to be like the choice. You can use a free word processor online. You can use free project management online. Or you can use Asana, Basecamp, Monday, you know, like really industrial. Well, I would say Monday and Asana are the industrial strength project management tools. Or you could use one that's, you know, a little more lightweight. I think Basecamp is the lighter weight, simpler version. Or you can use Notion and Coda templates. Or you can find a Word or a Google Doc or an Excel template, right?
Yeah.
There's 10 different ways you'll be able to do it. I think there'll be 10 different ways to use this AI, and it depends on how industrial strength.
Well, and it did give a summary after it was done, and so we were kind of checking it in progress here, and I'll just read it out to everyone. It says, the services business for Apple in 2023 Q3 generated $21 billion with a growth rate of 8% to the previous quarter.
That's big.
Exactly. Unfortunately, the net income and operating margin are not provided in these available documents, which they don't break it out, perhaps. And the market share is not compared. And this is, so I just want to build on what you just said. This is where, like, this is obviously purely off this public document, but this is where I think there'll be different level of services. And the way to think about this is Yahoo Finance versus Coifin versus Bloomberg.
Yes.
And so depending on your sophistication level, you know, you probably start with Yahoo Finance or Google Finance because it's free. And then you can move your way up to Coifin, which I don't know if you've used it at all, J.
No. What is Coifin?
Oh, yeah. It's like a mini Bloomberg. It's
free. What does it cost?
It's free. And then they have some pricing depending on, like, you know.
Is it a desktop app? No,
it's all web-based. It's just, I have it up here, right? And so it's all just web-based.
Shout
and
out
so
if to you want to go.
Yeah. And if you know, it gives you like 2 years of financials and estimates, but if you pay $35 a month, you get 10, and then you get some additional information as you go to pro. So look, it goes from 0 to 35 to 70, and it's really incredible. It's much better than Yahoo Finance. It's not Bloomberg, but Bloomberg's also, you know, $2,000 a month, right? Give or take. And so I think we're going to see the same thing emerge in this space. And this is a great tool. I don't know if you're using it or not, but you could use it for the J Trading portfolio. And it's really, really great.
Awesome. Yeah. Wow. This is fantastic. Yeah. Shout out to our friends at Coifin. I'm going to start trading a little bit more actively now. I kind of built up my portfolio, but now that it's the end of the year and I feel like I'm satisfied, I'm going to clear out some losers to get those tax loss harvesting. I'm going to sell some winners. So I net that out, I guess, the profits or whatever. I gotta figure out the tax treatment of losses. Can you carry over stock losses to the next year? How do I get the answer to that question? I've never been an active trader. So if I lost $100,000 on a trade.
Yeah.
And then can I take those losses against a trade the next year that had profits? In other words, I sell $100,000 in Uber shares next year, but I lost $100,000 on my Disney shares this year. What happens?
I don't know what the carryover time frame is. We should get advice or ask one of these things we're doing. Yeah. But what I will say is you can't buy it back. That's called wash trading, right? So there's some limits in how fast you can buy it back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense, right? So you can't take the loss and then buy it back. Then,
yeah, you have to wait a time period like 90 days or you know,
something
along those lines.
But that makes sense because let's say I lost $100,000 on my Disney trade. I sell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then let's say I had some profitable private company like Robinhood. I sell $100,000 of my Robinhood. I don't pay tax on that. It's a wash.
Yeah.
But I still want to own that Disney.
So
I just buy it again, you know, next year. And I'm buying it at $80 a share instead of when I bought it at $100 a share because I still believe in Disney. I think they're going to get sold. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's going to work. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some time limits, which I'm not an expert on, but
neither am I.
Look it up.
All right. Listen, this has been another amazing episode. Thank you so much to Sandeep Madra. Everybody check out Definitive Intelligence. And let's do an AI. We should do like an AI meetup or conference kind of thing based on this, like a This Week in Startups AI demo day or something. You got that beautiful office there I see behind you or something.
Yeah.
We'll do a meetup or something. All right. We'll see you all next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye.